morning, everybody. We got another hour until Orion Samuelson says good morning, and we get the morning show going here on 720 WGN. Joining us right now in studio is Casey Clark. He is the CEO of Cultivate Advisors. Joining him in studio, by the way, with us right now is Mrs. Clark, who is celebrating a birthday today. So thank you so much, Mrs. Clark, for getting up early to be with us. We appreciate that. She's embarrassed by that, but she also just doesn't trust her husband very much. She says, you're not going out at 4 in the morning without me. Where are we going? You do have something a little better planned for today than just this, I'm hoping.
We do. We've got brunch. We're going to have some fun. We're making her favorite meal, linguine and clams, later tonight. So should be a good time. We're expecting our first.
That sounds
too.
Like about 10 years of marriage right there.
We're expecting our first here in about 4 or 5 weeks. So we are,
congratulations.
You know, nice and relaxed right now.
Oh, nice. Oh, good for you. I would have never, I know it's dark in here, but I had no idea you were even pregnant. Not that I would have asked. I've learned that lesson long ago. You don't do that. Well, congratulations to you both. I'm very excited for you. So your first child coming up here in just a few weeks.
Yeah, we're excited.
Oh, man. That's a new small business you're going to be running.
That is a new small business we're going to be running.
With all these things, you have no idea how they work.
Oh, I don't think she's going to want me to advise that business, though. I think I'm going to have to be an active business owner.
You know, one thing I've learned in my 20 years of marriage is I wouldn't say, well, honey, here's how you have to look at things. And, like, don't give her the whole business model of it. She would just smack you upside the head with the frying pan.
Sure.
It's all brand new.
Well, there we go.
Congratulations to you both. That's going to be awesome.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you about Cultivate Advisors, your company, and your past.
Awesome.
In the entrepreneurial world, we love talking to entrepreneurs on the show. And, you know, I think a lot of us out there, I have a small little company, but I think a lot of people, even in their day-to-day lives, dream about, I'm going to go buy a bar, I'm going to run a restaurant, I'm going to do something that is my passion. Because so many of us end up with mortgages and things that prevent us from pursuing our passions and just pursuing the paychecks that keep our lives going, right? You started out in franchising.
Explain
to me your origins.
Yeah, I was in a home service franchise organization. So actually, while I was in university, I was running a small painting business. And not the, you know, maybe the sexiest business, but it was a business, right?
Probably pretty common for college students, right? Something like that. Window washing. I know I went to St. Mary's in Winona, Minnesota, and I served on the advisory board of their Kabar Institute.
Okay.
And we had these kids in that are starting things, and there's a student up there who started this window washing business. And
he was
expanding it and doing great, paying his way through college with a small window washing business.
It was an awesome business, right? I mean, you know, you're into my college years, I had, you know, 40, 45 employees that I was running as a business owner over the summers and working with all these customers.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the start. That was when I got the bug. And I went, why would I go work for someone else? Why would I go, you know, work, you know, clock in, clock out, when I have the ability to have my own autonomy and, you know, navigate the growth of the business. So that's where I got my start, was as a franchisee. And then I got tapped on the shoulder. They brought me up into the franchisor, and I started training these business owners how to get off the ground and how to scale their painting business, you know, throughout the U.S. And from there, it kind of took off. And by the end of it, I left, you know, after running majority of the central part of the U.S., and that was, I think that's what hooked me in terms of the passion that I had towards helping business owners, you know, take the passion and turn it into a reality, because there's so many other core skills that go in to getting that passion off the ground besides just being into the industry, right?
Yeah.
It's not just industry. You're running a business.
So you started out kind of running things yourself, but then the company brought you in. So then you were working for the company for a while. So you did see both ends of the spectrum. And did that eventually make you say, I want to do my own thing again?
I actually had all three. So I was a franchisee, so I had full ownership. Then I went into more of a support role where I was the employee.
Okay.
That was terrible for me, transparently.
Yeah.
That definitely helped me realize what was going to take place in my life. And then after that, I actually came in as a partner of the organization and then started helping drive the growth of the business. So I got to experience all three, which I think does give me a very unique lens into businesses and understanding what does it mean to actually train a business owner, but then also what does it mean to be the driver and on the field as the main player.
And what made you decide to leave and pursue other passions?
You know, I was there for over a decade, and what I found is that although painting was a good business and a good vehicle to teach someone how to run a business, I think I was ready to go into some different industries.
Yeah.
And what I really saw was that these younger folks that were learning how to run businesses, you know, a lot of the people we worked with were either in college or just out of college. That was kind of the model of the franchise system. When I started looking at the outside space, I started realizing how many of these other business owners were getting started, you know, in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s, and going, it was just pure passion and pure, you know, some dream, some vision, but they didn't have the tools and how to get there. So I was looking at everything we were teaching these folks and going, I bet we could take this to the outside world. And we were right. We were able to get off the ground pretty quick.
So when I started my company back in 2005, I had been producing here, making no money at all.
Yep.
So it was very easy for me to say, hey, I'm going to start my own company.
Yeah.
Because if it failed, I wasn't losing that much money anyways. I could go find another job.
Yeah.
When you had made it where you had made it to then leave and go pursue something else, I guess I could say, oh, you had gotten comfortable, so it was easier for you to do.
Yeah.
But I imagine once you're making a certain amount of money, it's harder to say, I'm going to give this sure thing up and go try this again on my own. For people who want to make that leap, what's your advice and how hard is it to say, okay, let's leave what's sure and insurance and all those good things we take for granted and jump into this head first, not knowing what's truly going to happen?
Well, we've got these five stages of how to run a business, and one of the first ones is actually called the hustler. And so my story is actually a little different than that. I didn't actually have to take that jump because I just double dipped for 2 years.
Okay.
So, you know, it's called grind it out, 80 hours a week. If you're really that passionate and you want to achieve your dreams, that's what you're going to do. So I think you got to know your own financial situation and what you're capable of doing. I'm definitely all about going all in on a business and making that your sole focus and your priority. There is, you know, such a thing as squirrel syndrome, right? Where you're jumping all around between all these hobbies trying to figure out what's important to you.
Yeah.
But if you know you have the business, don't be afraid to do what I did. I see so many others do that end up being successful is you just go, I'm going to build this, you know, so between, you know, 5 p.m. and midnight and between, you know, 4 a.m. and 7 a.m., I'm going to build a business while I'm also doing this other role that's just as important to me.
Okay, so that was when you were younger, and that was easier.
Yeah.
And a lot of our listeners would be in their 40s or so, or maybe have a baby on the way.
Yeah.
I mean, three months from now, if you said to your wife, honey, while I'm doing the 2 a.m. feeding, I'm also going to be running some spreadsheets. It's cool. I can do it all. It just gets harder and harder the more debt we have, the more mortgage we have, the more kids we have, the more everything else. So what's your advice for people in their 40s and 50s who are like, God, I really want to pursue a passion?
Yeah.
If you don't have the 80 hours a week, is it don't do it then? Or just if you really are passionate, you'll find the time?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of ways to get the financing set up to get a business off the ground. Either you're going to pull the financing in, right? And so you're making that conscious decision. Make sure you have a nice, you know, 2-year perform in place that somebody else has helped you build, because you'll be too optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be so excited about what you're going to go create, right? The goal is going to be up here and the reality is might be down here. So have somebody else who has those insights to go, this is probably a little more realistic. Let's see what the worst case analysis is. But I think, you know, outside of it, there's a lot of grants out there. There's a lot of great programs that'll help fund you and get you going and get you off the ground as a small business owner. So you want to take advantage of those as well. But I will tell you, I mean, most of our, you know, and I'm speaking mostly from our clients, we've seen a lot of people leave the corporate world or different industries and decide to start their own business. And I'll tell you, most of them end up grinding it out with two, even with multiple kids. I mean, it's just, you know,
they keep the job and start the new company.
They do. I mean, that's majority of the model that we see that these small business owners get off the ground. And obviously you can get tech or some of the other businesses that are able to go out and get VC funding early on, but that's going to be rare in unicorns.
So would you say in general that is the way to do it, or that's the scared way to do it? Because you're starting it because, well, I still need that income. I can't guarantee this is going to work out. So I'm not, you know, completely jumping off the deep end here.
Again, you know, it's I think when you're pushed and when you're stretched like that, you're going to know what's important to you. And I actually think when you're grinding like that, it's actually easier to make the jump, because what happens is that you get in, let's call it 3-4 months in, every business, every industry is different, but you start to generate revenue and you start to see what you're doing and go, am I getting any type of traction with this?
Yeah.
And if you are, that's when it now triggers you to give you the confidence to jump. So I think people have to go through that self-doubt issue of, you know, kind of coming to the place of going, I am going to make the jump. Now, if they already know they're going to make the jump, get the financials in order, get everything in place and go all in the business. We're definitely ones to get in front of our clients and say, hey, it's time to leave this other, you know, role. You're leaning on it. I still remember one of my first clients I worked with. She was a real estate agent, very successful, but she was also still at the, you know, the hospitality world, going into the Trump Tower, other places, and providing a waitress, right? Being a waitress for these large catering events. So she would burn the midnight oil doing these larger events 3-4 times a week. But here I'm meeting with her. She's 6-7 years in on the business of running real estate. She's making over 6 figures a year. And I'm going, why are you still doing this and stretching yourself? It took me 2.5 years to finally convince her to leave, because that was just her comfortability.
Yeah.
And so you see that a lot with these small business owners, because, you know, a lot of these folks, they don't want to put that much capital into it. They don't want to infuse the finance. They don't want to take the debt risk. But they have this passion. They have this drive for autonomy. They want to make more of an impact in what they're doing. It's a hard, everybody has to go through their journey a little differently.
Yeah. All right. So let's jump to, you did the franchising, you worked in the company, you leave and you form Cultivate Advisors. Tell me what Cultivate Advisors is.
Yeah, so I co-founded Cultivate Advisors. So with a business partner that I met in the painting world, we were big competitors. His name's Dan Grauman out of Milwaukee. And so when we had this idea, we were looking at the market, and I read this article from Forbes at the time that said small business coaching is one of the fastest growing industries, taking off in the U.S. right now. So I started looking around, and I started realizing there was no company out there that had become the voice of small business. There was a lot of people pre-revenue that wanted to get in and do investment capital raising. There was a lot of folks that would offer consulting for medium-sized businesses. And then, you'd find your mentors or your small business coaches, but there wasn't necessarily an established company that was spread throughout the U.S. that was known as the company to call if you were a small business and you want to grow, that was there to teach you the fundamentals of how to run, grow, and scale a business, not teach you your industry. Very, very different. So the folks we work with, they know their industry. We come in as their partner to teach the business acumen side and partner with them to help pull them sometimes, drag them sometimes, push them at times across whatever line they're working towards in their business.
Interesting. And you said 40 full-time employees working with how many different companies around the country right now?
So right now, actively who we work with, we're just over 450 is where we're at. We've worked with a total of about 750 in the last 3 years.
So when you say working on the business side of it, they know their industry, you need the business side of it. What does that mean? What are the parts that most small business owners are not tackling well?
Well, it's wearing all the hats of the business is what we call it, right? So you've got financials. That's probably the big one that we see. Most people just don't have the understanding of how to manage the financials. I'm not talking about accounting. I'm actually talking about cash flow. I'm talking about the operational side of financials. Mm-hmm. You've got recruiting. How do I bring on talent? When do I know when to hire? How should I hire? And then you get to leadership. When do I build a leadership team? How do I lead? How does that work? I have to build a sales process. I have to build a marketing engine and a funnel that's going to be sustainable and consistent. Productivity, though. How do I manage my calendar? How do I get the most out of my output, especially as a small solopreneur if you're in those earlier stages?
Yeah.
The only way you're going to scale is you've got to get really scrappy, and you've got to figure out how to get out of that. And the only way to do that is to be overproductive than everybody else.
And then bring people in, right? Eventually, you have to bring people in and build it up. And I found that that's one of the toughest things to figure out how to do, because
human capital.
When you're used to doing everything, then I'm going to bring somebody else in and hand them things to do, but then I'm naturally going to then watch over and say,
yes.
Well, this is how I do. Well, this is well, and then I'm just now wasting money on things and maybe even stretching myself more thin because now I'm babysitting something that I should have passed off completely. Is that very tough for most people to let go? Is there a letting go process that you have to hire and trust?
Totally. I mean, I think there's three triggers when it comes to the org chart growth, right? It's when you're the solopreneur and you're growing out of that stage. It's like, when do I hire? Who do I hire? And how do I lead these one or two people and give up that control? That is one trigger. The other place is when we call it getting up to a leadership of capacity. Meaning, as a leader, you're no longer really focused on the end user of your business. You're now more focused on your team, and you've got a full team reporting to you, but you're still driving the day-to-day. That's a hard time because they have to understand that they have to leave the end user, and now their business is about leading their employees, not the end user. Mm. And then the third one is when they get even larger and they bring in that leadership team, and now they've lost control. Now they're not able to, they're just setting the goal. They're not actually able to set the path. And those are really the three triggers where we see people get extremely uncomfortable and get in that position where they go, please help. How do I do this? How do I navigate this? Not just mindset, but tactics. Because even like you just said, are you babysitting? Are you following up these people? My gut says if somebody's feeling that way, they're actually having a skill issue. They don't know who to hire and they need help with that. They don't know how to onboard, train, set expectations properly, or they don't know how to lead properly. And you get those three things right, it doesn't have to be what you just said where it's babysitting. It can actually be, wow, this person's more talented than me and they're taking this business faster than I ever could. And that's hard to do, but if you hone in, you can create it.
Is that a problem? I would imagine that, I think looking back, that's been an issue for me over the years, is that we know we need somebody else. We know we need to take some things off our plate, but we don't plan out exactly what that means. We just bring somebody in and then we're sort of figuring out what in the world they're doing and it doesn't flow well.
I mean, exactly. I mean, that's the epitome of most small business owners. Head down, driving through concrete walls, grinding out the business versus taking the space to work on the business. Think, strategically, look out long term and figure out who's the persona I want to work with, who's going to help us take the business to the next level, and what's that ROI going to be worth? And that's, it's risky. I mean, that's, you know, it's, it, you build up as a solopreneur, you build up to the point where you have a good amount of money coming in, and then you have to go, I'm going to cut my earnings in half so I can bring somebody else in.
Right.
And I have to hope it's going to return better. And it may only return better by 10, 15%. It may not be that big of a return. You really don't see it till you're maybe 4 or 5 employees in most industries.
Mm.
That's a hard moment to get your hands wrapped around as a, especially a first time business owner, going, how am I going to do this? And is it worth it? So fear sets in.
So when you want to grow the company and you're talking about bringing somebody else on, do you have to make it more of a down the road plan that this might not pay its dividends right away? We might make less money right away, but it's important for the strategic growth of the company. If we know we, to get bigger, we have to grow,
yeah,
but we're say a certain percent profitable right now, but once we bring this other person on, we can't grow as fast as we need to. We're not going to be as profitable, but 3 years down the road, we should be. Do you have to look that far ahead?
I mean, actually, we say you have to look 5 years ahead as a small business owner. You have to know, you know, short term, you have to know what your cash flow looks like over the next 2 years. Anything after that, who knows if it's going to be the reality.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the metrics and what the growth of the company is going to do and will it sustain, we're looking 5 years out. But again, every business is different, right? I can think of a client we had a few months ago where, you know, she came to us and we actually within the first month said, okay, you're going to be hiring 3 employees, just so you know. She was that overstretched. She had waited too long. So It's not always, yeah, let's plan it out and go slow. Sometimes sure. Reality is go.
Could she afford to hire 3 people?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, again, you know, and we talk through this and we have a methodology, these 5 stages that every entrepreneur goes through. But one of the things we talk about is when you're first hiring, you've got to hire entrepreneurial folks. You've got to get really creative with compensation. Too often as entrepreneurs, we're too afraid to give up any part of the company. And so it's very common, those first few employees, you see any of these large tech companies that really grow and really explode, they do the same thing. They give those first few employees options or ways to feel part of the profit sharing in a non-conventional way.
So that's important. Get paid almost nothing and work 100
exactly.
hours
put a week.
Put
the person on commission.
It.
Get somebody like you because you want to bring in an entrepreneur because they're going to be just like you, those first few employees, right? They're going to wear all the different hats, all different tasks. You can't have a specialist in the role at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to bring somebody in that wants to look at this and take ownership of the business just like you. You've got to figure out how to duplicate yourself. And those first 2 or 3 employees, they will dictate your success. We've seen that over and over again.
That's got to be really hard, though, because not only are you hiring somebody and really entrusting them, you're giving them a piece of your vision, too, in your company.
Yeah. And there's ways to do it where you don't have to give away a piece. I don't want to make it sound like you should give up equity. I don't believe sure. in giving out a lot of equity when you grow a business. But there is a way to do it and get creative with compensation to where you will attract that entrepreneur. Because there's folks out there that want the impact. They want the passion. Our biggest piece of advice is always find an entrepreneur that wants to run their own business in the future. And they want to use the opportunity with you as a catalyst, as a vehicle to learn mm-hmm. how to run, grow, and scale a company
themselves.
Is it
easy to find those people? I mean, when you say this, I'm thinking, okay, somebody young just out of college who doesn't have a mortgage yet and have all these mm-hmm. things that need a big salary these things.
No, I mean, sure, that's one place. That's not necessarily where I would go, depending on the business.
Yeah.
It depends on the industry, really, and what you know skill level is required. But no, I mean, again, and I'm not saying you don't pay a small salary. I'm not saying you don't offer, you know, some small amount of benefits. There's so many great programs out there for small business owners now to help support and bring all the resources in. But no, I mean, I'm saying, you know, if maybe the market is says you need to bring in somebody at $80,000 a year, you know, bring them in at 40 and put a commission yield on, you know, how much it's going to take to hit X, Y, and Z results. Because you're probably hiring a salesperson. You're probably hiring somebody that's going to help drive revenue. That's where you should stay focused early on.
Mm-hmm.
That's normally how it works. Because if you're hiring somebody operationally, you should have the revenue coming in to produce it. That's a lagging right, as that's a lagging indicator when you want to bring in the person on operations side. If you're going to hire proactively before the money's there, you're probably bringing somebody in, you know, for sales or marketing.
Yeah,
those folks are used to commission-based payout. They're used to profit sharing. They're used to those types of opportunities. So it's not uncommon, and you'll find people that are willing to take the risks because they're truly entrepreneurs. Their risk profile is just a bit higher.
We're speaking with Casey Clark of Cultivate Advisors. They've got a conference coming up in town. We've got more questions. If you have a question, 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break for the news right after this on 720 WGN. Matt Pavala here with you for a few more minutes on 720 WGN. We've got Orion Samuelson coming up with the morning show here in just a little bit. In studio with us right now is Casey Clark from Cultivate Advisors and his lovely wife, Emily, who is telling me off the air the best business deal he ever made was he fired a client to get a wife. Is that basically what happened?
It was the other way around, though, actually. The client said, hey, are you single? I said, yes. I really want to introduce you, you know, to my sister-in-law. And I said, okay, yeah. So we went on.
To his sister-in-law.
Yeah, to his sister-in-law.
Okay.
Yeah. And then
I think it'd be weird for a guy to say, I really want to introduce you to my sister.
Yeah, that would have been a little weird.
I just can't imagine setting somebody up with my sister.
No.
And that's how I thought you told the story at first. I thought, wow, he must have really trusted you and liked you.
And then we decided that this is probably not the right move. We probably shouldn't stay in this advising relationship. Let's just become brother-in-laws and we'll have the beer, you know, business advice conversations versus the more structured.
Right.
So I think it was a good decision.
And how long have you guys been married?
Almost a year. Our year anniversary is coming up.
Oh, you're just coming up on a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well,
the business has only been around for just over 4 years, right? So about a year in, I got introduced. So we've been together now for, coming up just over 3 years, actually, almost four. And then, so we've been married for about a year now.
And I have to say, I love the way you look at him because you just look sort of like, I'm approving. I really appreciate it.
Don't screw this up. Don't say anything that's going to embarrass me.
Yes, he's kind of got that. I'm looking over your shoulder. Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Calls you out when she disagrees with what you say.
Absolutely, she will.
All right. So, Cultivate Advisors, you guys have a conference coming up, the Catapult Conference.
We do.
For clients only. But tell me what you guys provide for your clients during that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously, we do one-on-one advising. That's what we do all year long, you know, with the advisor and the client that we work with, the small business owner. But, you know, 2 years ago, we had the idea. We said, we need to really bring this community together. We've got people all throughout U.S., Canada. We've got people in Europe. We've got even people in China that we work with. So we bring everybody together into Chicago once a year. We put on this really big 2.5-day conference. And there's really three core principles that are happening in this conference. One, it's a big celebration. Business owners don't get to celebrate. They're always celebrating their clients, their employees. They're celebrating their vendors. No one ever gets them the pat on the back and says, you're doing an amazing job. So transparently, we throw a huge party for them. We have an awards night. We go all out because we want to celebrate their achievements. And, you know, we're giving away these growth awards. And, you know, these companies are growing by 160, 200, 250% a year in terms of their growth. So, you know, that's a big piece of it. The other pieces of it, skill development. We do 20 different breakout sessions. We've got some really great keynotes. We've got Jason Vandenboom, CEO of Active Campaign. He's obviously a really big success story here in Chicago. He's going to come and actually speak to the group. So we bring in some people that have gone through that entrepreneurial journey prior and have really exploded and kind of hit their objectives, their vision, their dreams to share their stories. So
do you put your clients together regularly at all, like in situations or in group meetings so that they can learn from each other and what's working, what's not working?
Absolutely. Everything we do there is going to be workshop based. So definitely some training based, but it's also workshop based for peer learning. Mm-hmm. That's part of it because you have all these different industries. They can take these different models and bring them together to go, well, that worked for your business. I wonder if that can work for my business, although it's a very different industry. Yeah. The same model might work.
Yeah.
But the third element that we actually do for these folks is we give them the space to actually do business with each other. A lot of folks we work with are professional services or even just B2C consumer services. So we see so much networking, so much peer collaboration take place. You know, we launched our app just a few weeks ago and there's all these groups lined up. Everybody's chatting, you know, already doing business together and doing deals. So we kind of bring this community together to let somebody from Vancouver start to get introduced to a business owner in the similar industry in Chicago and they can collaborate. They can start moving needles where on the business. Well, although they're in the same industry, they're not competitors. They're not necessarily working with the same folks. So that's why our spread is so important and why we have to bring this, you know, North American community together. It's an absolute blast.
All right. So let me ask you a question about business. One of the tough things, I think, is figuring out the value of your services and how much you charge. And I think a lot of times that depends on the company you're working with and are you trying to cultivate a relationship you hope will grow into more or is it, you know, a straight just one shot thing and how you decide what your prices are and things, and, you know, the rest of the market, how they're whatever. At a meeting earlier this week with somebody who we had pitched some business to and they came back, changed the proposal significantly for what they wanted, which was fine.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted something they could do more quickly, et cetera, et cetera. And the price that they offered for the services was about not even half of what we had proposed to them.
Mm.
And the person I was working with and I had a discussion that we have to talk about what are we worth, you know, what's our value with these other projects we have and what we're doing and how much time this would take and et cetera, et cetera. And so we had a call talking about what they envisioned now in this revamp proposal and then had the discussion where I said, well, just so you know, what we would charge for this is not what you've, you know, offered on this and here's what we're looking at and we will offer this at less than we have charged for other people because we want to grow with you, we want to be long term, but this is, you know, where we're at and what we need to do. And it got to be a very awkward phone call.
Sure.
And probably is not going to work out at all now. But
yeah.
And so you kind of look back and go, you know, we just threw away some business here, possibly.
Yeah.
But at what point do you value the time we have with other projects and what we need to do versus just generating new business? How do you handle things like that in general?
It's a tough question. I mean, there's a lot of different models. The first thing I'll say is absolutely, if you're in an industry and you don't know what to charge, you need to do your market research and you need to do the R&D, right? And I'm not actually talking about research and development. I'm talking about rob and duplicate.
Okay.
Take, all right, take what somebody else is doing if you're getting started. But if you're off the ground and you've got other revenue coming in, that's going to help you get an idea of what you're worth. I mean, there's really two schools of thought. One school of thought is, I say, well, you're in this situation. Let's actually start with, what do you want to profit? What does the business need to put out to make this worthwhile for you? Let's work all that backwards and let's figure out your pricing through that. And let's see if we can make it make sense in the market.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way. The second way is you do it by demand. You go, well, how much demand do I have? And that will dictate my price, meaning I'd rather take some money versus no money. And I really think it just depends on what stage of the business you're in through the entrepreneurial journey, when you might make those decisions. But in the situation you just shared, I think you did it right. In fact, you know, we always tell our client, one of the first levers we pull with a client when we meet them to help get the growth of the business, we go, it's time to raise prices. Let's talk about how to do that. It's one of the first conversations we normally have because people don't take into account all the different costs that go into the business. They look at the, you know, I'm going to get really accountant based on you, but they look at all the COGS and the cost of goods sold. They look at that really easily, but they're forgetting all those fixed and all those other costs, those direct allocated costs that are happening. Most importantly, the owner's time involved, or the employee's time, you know, in pursuit of whatever objective they're trying to reach. So I guess the only piece of advice I can give is that to say, if I was in that situation, I would have had the exact same conversation. The only small difference I may have had is to come in and just go, our price is what it is, and it's because this is how good we are. I'll give you a small discount for maybe this portion of it, just so you can get a taste of working with me. But once I'm in, you're going to see how talented I am and how much less time you spend than what you'll spend with other vendors. And then you're not going to question my price again, because I will deliver. And I think it's that just unbelievable confidence that you will bring that makes people go, you know what, this person's more expensive, but I like them more. I trust them more. And that way, there's a bit more of a yin and yang to the relationship early on.
But then the key is, then you really have to deliver on that, right?
They have to have
their socks blown off and say, all right, we have to spend the money because this is worth it.
Welcome to the number one reason why a business will scale or why it won't. Are you good or are you not?
Is that the number one issue holding people back?
It really is. I mean, you've got to have a good product and a good service. You've got to be able to deliver. If you're not able to, there's no point working on the scale of the business. It won't last. It won't sustain it. You just think about it, right? You don't have the fundamentals, like building a house. You got to put that foundation and that concrete to let all the framing sit on top. If that's cracking and you don't even have the service or product clear of how you're going to do it, or you don't know how to deliver it, you're going to be in trouble.
All right. If people want to work with Cultivate Advisors, somebody's got a company or is planning on starting a company, explain how it works with you guys.
Yeah.
What is the service model, and can you give me some general costs, or is that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Happy to share all that. Yeah, we're a super transparent company. Again, our goal is to become partners with these owners and help them grow and scale, which is why we have so many of our clients who've stayed with us since the, you know, beginning of the company started. Mm-hmm. Go to cultivateadvisors.com. That's a good place to start. Learn more about us. And you're going to take an entrepreneurial journey quiz when you're on our website. That's going to help us get an idea, and you get an idea of what stage are you in. And that already helps us start to identify what advisor are we going to pair you with. So all of our advisors, they've all ran businesses in the past. That's the only folks we bring into the business. They're full-time employees with us, and they're incentivized based on how well you do and how well you grow the business. So that makes our model a little unique. Now, as far as the when you come in, we're going to offer you a free two-hour advising session. So we're a very see if you like it, see if you have you can create a bit of a good relationship with this advisor and there's a good fit. We start there. And then from there, we'll kind of build you a roadmap for the next 5 years to say, this is what I think we need to work on. Let's get started. It's a 6-month program to start. And then it's month to month after. That way, if we're not doing our job and we're not delivering, you don't have to keep us around. We're pretty confident in that, which is why we have our model set up that way. An average person, you know, they're spending anywhere between $1,200 and $1,800 a month is what they're spending with us.
Okay.
So we try to keep costs down. We only work with small business. That's what we're really good at. And when I say small business, I mean $10 million or less.
So $1,200 to $1,800 a month, that's a good nut, though, for a small business.
If you want to grow the business and you want to scale, the ROI is, you know, thousands of thousands of percent, actually, you know, lifetime. When you learn how to grow a business by 100, 200,000, or maybe a half a million, a million in a year, I mean, that's a small price to pay. But yeah, we want people who are committed and serious.
What is your next step down the road? So say Cultivate Advisors, you grow this, becomes a thing, and you're like, okay, what's your next dream vision of something you want to create?
Well, I will share one thing. It is growing, right? So it is there. I don't know if you're aware of their map, but we just hit number 280 on the Inc. 500 list for the fastest growing companies in the U.S. So we're super proud of that. Have to give a really, really big shout out to my team. It was a team effort. We grinded it out to get to that point. We're really excited about it. But what's long term for us? I mean, you know, right now, you know, we launched in Chicago. So we started here in Chicago. We've got an office now in Denver, and we've got an office in Vancouver. We're identifying another five or six markets we want to, you know, expand to over the next, let's call it 5 or 6 years. And I think long term, you know, really, we're structured like a law firm. So a lot of our advisors come in and we give them the opportunity to become partners of the company. That's one of the ways that we're going to grow and scale our company. And so through that, my hope really long term is to sit on the board of this company and really help support thousands and thousands of entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Cultivate Advisors, I know, Casey, but you're a serial entrepreneur. You're thinking about the next thing already. I know that. You're on Shark Tank here. So what is the next thing that you see yourself? Cultivate Advisors grows, becomes this great thing, and then your role gets reduced, all the younger people push you out.
Yeah.
Then you're going to do what?
Well, I used to think I just wanted to go golf all day, but I think I actually would get bored. I think I need to have something active.
Yeah.
But I think long term, I love the space of small business. I know what I'll do is we'll probably look into the network and go, what are these businesses that really have this opportunity to grow and scale? We'll go get a bigger piece in terms of coming in and really capitally investing into those businesses. That's where I see myself going long term. But right now, I'm pretty happy with where I'm at. We're making a big impact.
Casey Clark with Cultivate Advisors. Visit them at cultivateadvisors.com. Thank you to him and his lovely wife, Emily, and baby Matthew for being here today.
I don't think that name's on the list.
We can add it to the
That's going
to
float in there, though, now. You'll remember how you started out your birthday morning. That Matt guy, that was a really nice guy. I think Matthew, that really sounds good, Casey. I think we should think about Matthew. Just going to just let that marinate a little bit. All right, guys, thank you so much for coming in. Have a wonderful birthday.
Thank you, Matt.
And we look forward to seeing more from Cultivate Advisors, cultivateadvisors.com. News coming up in a little bit here on 720 WGN.